Welcome to Technology and the Arts, a bi-weekly podcast exploring the connections between the worlds of technology and art. In this installment, we'll hear more of our conversation with Janie Herman and Evan Klimple about the poetry podcast they produced for the Princeton Public Library in New Jersey. Plus, we'll discuss the Microsoft Milan Surface computer, Pandora's move away from the PC, and we'll give another update on the controversial royalty rates targeted at webcasters. We'll talk about all of this and more just ahead on Technology and the Arts for Wednesday, June 6th, 2007. Now, here are your hosts, Brian Kelly and John Lemazny.
Welcome to another edition of Technology and the Arts podcast. As always, Technology and the Arts seeks to explore the connections between technology and art and to establish a forum for discussing the impact technology has made on the human creative process and on literature, music, and the visual and interactive arts.
And to let you know who we are, my name is Brian Kelly. I'm a journalist by trade, amateur songwriter, musician, and science and technology enthusiast living in central New Jersey.
And I'm John Lemazny, a father, artist, musician, poet, and technologist living in New Jersey.
Taking a look at what's on the palette for this podcast in our In Perspective segment, we'll discuss our latest finds on the internet pertaining to technology and the arts, including a cool new product recently introduced by Microsoft at the D All Things Digital Conference. Then, in our dialogue segment, we'll continue our conversation from our last podcast by hearing from Janie Herman and Evan Klimple from the Princeton Public Library in New Jersey about the poetry podcast they produced for Poetry Month in April. But before we get into all that, John, it's good to see you again. We had a long time off. Did you do anything special for the Memorial Day weekend holiday?
I sure did. We went to Virginia, where I have family and Dawn grew up. And I just wanted to say that, as a shout out, my little boy sends his love to his grandma, granny, and granddaddy. We had a great time, and I just wanted to say how beautiful Virginia is. How about you, Brian?
Well, I spent Memorial Day weekend in Rhode Island with my girlfriend. One of her friends got married at the University of Rhode Island in Kingston. We actually stayed at a bed and breakfast in Newport. And so, the Sunday after the wedding, we went and did the Cliff Walk in Newport, which is this coastline path that goes behind all of the summer cottages, which are actually mansions, built by the Vanderbilts and the Ulrichs and the Belmonts. There's some of it's a path, some of it actually goes on to the rocks. It's kind of treacherous at some point, but it was fun. We both got a little sick, so we had to overcome that. We both got colds the night of the wedding, but we soldiered on. And we also, the weekend before that, we went to the Wave Gathering Festival that was in Asbury Park. Saw a great performance by my friend Christian Beach, also a former Technology and the Arts guest. And also, we happened to see the last half of a set by Philadelphia's own Ben Arnold, which was really good. So, yeah, it was a fun night. And, we've done a lot the past couple weeks without the podcast hanging over our heads. But now it's time to get back to work. And it's now time to get to our In Perspective segment. This is where we discuss recent headlines, hot topics, or helpful and interesting websites we have discovered recently. John, do you have anything you would like to put in perspective for our listeners this week?
Well, to be completely honest, I have been inundated with work with a graduate class that I am taking this summer. And so, unfortunately, I really don't have anything to offer in perspective during this segment. But I understand that you have quite a bit.
Yeah, I do. Our friends at Pandora have announced plans to bring the music recommendation and radio service to Sprint mobile phones, as well as to digital music devices made by Sonos. This will allow you to use and listen to Pandora without the need of a PC. If you want to read more about it, please check out the May 23rd post on the Technology and the Arts blog and follow the links in that, or you can just click on the links in the show notes. And speaking of Pandora, the SaveNet Radio Coalition, which includes Pandora, NPR, Yahoo, and others, asked an appeals court on May 30th to delay the royalty rate increase announced by the Copyright Royalty Board in March. The controversial new rate schedule, which would effectively put many internet radio services out of business, are set to go into effect July 15th. The appeal to delay the rate hike is to allow Congress more time to act on two similar proposals that would scrap the CRB's decision and reverse the royalty rate increases. And finally, since we kind of bashed Microsoft in our last podcast, I would just like to say that the new Milan Surface computer the company unveiled at the recent D All Things Digital conference does look pretty cool, and I want to give credit where credit is due.
Me too.
It's basically a 30-inch tabletop computer monitor with interactive touchscreen technology connected to a Windows Vista-powered PC. It kind of looks like one of those old Pac-Man or Miss Pac-Man games that you used to sit down at in like the waiting room of a Pizza Hut, and it would be a tabletop display.
It's a shared American experience.
Yes. It's interactive in a way that, say you have a Wi-Fi-enabled digital camera, and you place it down on the surface of this Microsoft Milan Surface computer, it will automatically recognize it and import any images off the camera onto the computer. And then once the photos are on the Milan, you and anybody else who's surrounding the table can virtually move around these piles of photos, and just by moving your hands, and much like on the iPhone, you can resize and shuffle them, you know, just by hand motion. So it sounds really cool. Unfortunately, it's not going to be a consumer product for quite some time. It's going to be for casinos and hotels. Its initial price tag is going to be between $5,000 and $10,000. But if you want to know more about it, just follow the links in the show notes.
You could argue that there will be consumer products because it's this technology, in a way, is going to be present in the iPhone. And so not in the same way that when you drop a camera on top of an iPhone, it will transfer those photos or anything. But there's going to be Bluetooth technology in the iPhone. There's going to be similar kinds of interactive features. The ability to resize photos, for example, is one of the things that Steve Jobs really demonstrated when he showed the iPhone. But the other thing that bothers me a little bit about this, and kudos to Microsoft to being able to market the product so well, is that Jeff Han has been showing this for over a year. I mean, if you follow David Pogue at all in the New York Times and Circuits, he talked about and showed Jeff Han's visual wall technology, where he's doing all sorts of interactive tactile things and really showing what Microsoft showed on this relatively small space in a much larger space, Jeff Han did. And so I don't know if Jeff Han is going to be revealed as somebody who helped Microsoft out with this or what, but I think it remains to be seen. And what Microsoft's saying about it is that they've had 20 people or 30 people working on this for the last 5 years, you know, and that they've been working on this long before Jeff Han or Apple was working with the technology. And there may also be some connection between Jeff Han and the iPhone. But again, that's not to be revealed yet. I'm sure that's company secrets right now.
But again, I can't remember the last time Microsoft introduced something that I actually was impressed with and kind of excited me. And this definitely excites me.
It's to be excited about, but just keep in mind that they may not have been the innovators. They may have been the grand marketers.
Right. But
which is usually Apple.
Right. And Apple does the same thing. I mean, nothing they do is
USB
different.
2, FireWire right. 800. Yeah.
Nothing they do is different. They're just good at marketing it, and they're good at making it look good and look cool.
And they're good at saying that we're the first ones to do it. And Microsoft is taking a page out of Apple's success right there.
And it's about time.
Yeah, well, maybe this will be a spark in innovation, real innovation for Microsoft, as opposed to what it's been up until now, which is a lot of lip service. Oh, I'm sorry. Are we bashing Microsoft again? Sorry.
But now, here is the technology and the arts events calendar. This is your technology and the arts events calendar. Soundmarks, which runs from June 8th through August 18th, 2007, at Art Interactive in Cambridge, Massachusetts, is an exhibit of site-specific sound and video installations by Amy Stacy Curtis and the team of Zach Poff and M.B. Aldridge. Employing both new media and traditional audio technologies, these artists experiment with ways in which art can serve as a catalyst for common experience and a site for community exchange. For more information about Soundmarks, visit www.artinteractive.org or call 617-498-0100.
to stay informed about events related to technology and the arts, please remember to check out the Technology and the Arts events page at techarts.wordpress.com.
Well, now it's time for our dialogue segment, during which we hear from those who work with technology and art on an everyday basis. This week, we'll continue to hear from Janie Herman and Evan Klempel from the technology training team at the Princeton Public Library in New Jersey. We started to hear about the poetry podcast that Janie and Evan produced for Poetry Month during our last podcast on May 16th, but that was just a small portion of our conversation with them. So, without further ado, here again are Janie Herman and Evan Klempel from the Princeton Public Library.
One of the really interesting aspects of this particular project is that the variety that happens with the way that you've approached it is part of the key of its success. I think that you are really using the tools to its best advantage, and the fact that it's library-based means that you are not sort of heading down a path of one particular voice or one particular nationality or one particular area of the world or one particular rhythm. I think that you have the license to really explore it in the way that you have. I think it's been great.
And we're just fortunate to live in a community such as Princeton that is very active in this area. And the library's long history of doing outreach to the community of poets. Also, with the multilingual poetry night here at the library, which, you know, does lend itself into that, and we certainly had several poets from that night come in, the US One Poet Cooperative, as I said. We were lucky enough to have Elaine Terranova and Darcy Cummings already booked to come in, and they're both, you know, very well-known poets in their right, and they offered to do us some podcasts as well. So we were really fortunate to be in Princeton.
And just to also speak to that, we also had a great mix of nationalities and of subject matter as well. Having poets who were from Greece, from Russia, from Ireland with Paul Muldoon, it definitely lent a great atmosphere to it.
Let's talk a little bit about how the public has perceived it and what kind of activity there's been on the site. What have your hits been like?
They exceed our expectation. We didn't actually have, I don't think we had very many expectations when we went into this.
I think we were really not sure how it was going to be received. Plenty of web projects are worthwhile and worthy and just never get the attention that they deserve. To go into it, we were kind of, on this one, we were flying a bit blind in that we didn't have any benchmarks to work against from previous projects. The Children's Workshop Authors was of a much longer time frame, where one a month would go up as opposed to one per day for the entire month. So it was kind of working in the dark a little to see the first time through how it would come out, and the results were just fantastic.
Yeah, we had a lot of build up to this because we had been mentioning it every poetry event for several months beforehand. So, and we had on April 2nd a National Poetry Month kickoff where Elaine Terranova and Darcy Cummings did the reading, and we went live at that moment, and we had a large crowd there for that, and you know, we had also good real estate on our website all month. And that's where a lot of our click-through traffic came. Within about 7 days of going up, I think it was 8 days actually, yeah, we did hit a high point of about 275 hits on the webpage in a single day. And we are within 20 hits of making 5,000.
I think we might have passed it before we came in here.
We're about 5,000 visitors. And because of being on WordPress, we can really clearly see where our visitors are coming from. Seven other blogs picked up on us and posted about us, including Bookslut, which gave us a lot of traffic because that's a very well-read blog. We were surprised. We didn't actually do a whole lot of promotion beforehand. We were kind of interested in seeing where it could go by word of mouth. And then the Albany Times Union blog picked us up and several other library blogs. I did blog about it on my own blog at Library Garden, and that gave us, you know, some extra boost when we needed it. But I think a large part of it was done through word of mouth, and each and every single poet that read, of course, would forward it on to their family and friends, come look at what I've done, and it grew from there. Although we had visitors come, one from as far away as Malaysia, who sent in a request that they want to translate one of the poems, and we received comments from Sweden. You know, I can't really tell exactly how globally we've gone, but we've certainly gotten a lot of good attention, much more than we expected.
How would you pursue allowing that to happen? In other words, because it's not your poem, how are you going to follow up with that Malaysian request?
Well, actual fact, it got followed up on the poet who, it was Judith McNally's poem. She saw the comment appear on the blog, and she contacted me, and she was very excited. So a lot of our poets were following along. We've had at least a dozen or more, I'm losing track, poets, you know, email us directly to tell us what a fantastic experience is. We've had three or four handwritten notes saying just how much they're appreciative of this. So yes, Judith McNally was going to get in contact with this individual who wanted to translate it for his students, and really a wonderful experience. And then we had some interesting things occur when the Princeton Rep Shakespeare Company realized that we were doing this, and they wanted us to tie it in with Shakespeare's birthday. And we hadn't really planned on doing that, so that was kind of organic. But we ended up doing three posts in concert with their Shakespeare on the Square festival that happened around the time of Shakespeare's birthday. So that worked out rather nicely as well.
It was very interesting and a very different take from everything that was going on to hear a professional actor read the work of Shakespeare. The incredible detail that was given to the reading was just fantastic. We had the prologue for Henry V and Sonnet 21. And in addition to that, part of what they were doing was original poetry that was based off Sonnet 21 with the New Jersey Arts Council, I believe, sponsored that. So it was very nice to be involved with something like that.
Let's talk about other projects that you think you might take on as a result of your experience with the poetry block.
We were actually in the middle of applying for some funding from the NEH to figure out a way to, we have a series called Writers Talking, where we bring in a lot of high-profile writers as well as new and upcoming writers and authors, and to be able to maybe do interviews with them before they speak and put those up on our site as promotion or, so we're looking at that. We're looking at maybe continuing the poetry podcasting in a different format. And, you know, there are other libraries out there that are doing great podcasts as well. A very popular one is to do, they used to do Dial a Story, and now it's Podcast a Story. So maybe there can be a tie-in where we do a children's story time podcasting. You have to be careful about copyright on those ones, but there can be some really wonderful things done with podcasting and libraries. To us, the goal of podcasting, a lot of places when they podcast, it's more about their place, about their library. We want to provide original content based upon what we do here at the library and our programs. And with my position here at the library as being both technology training and program director, it really melds together nicely. I have the interest in technology. I also have the interest in what programs come into the library. So hopefully this is going to go together very nicely in the future.
Yeah, and I think the word content is the key here. We have so many unique events at the Princeton Public Library that it would be a true shame to let this content, this original wonderful material, just disappear and not have it preserved.
We also like to do some musical podcasts. We bring in a lot of musical acts here. We have the Masters of the Celtic Harp here in March, and I would have, you know, if we'd had our act together then, I would have loved to have had a recording them to put up on our website. Hopefully when we bring in a lot of original acts, we'll be able to get some musical recordings going as well.
That'd be wonderful.
Well, thank you very, very much for your time.
We hope you enjoyed that two-part interview with Janie and Evan, and that you get a chance to check out the Princeton Public Library's poetry podcast, which can be found at pplpoetpodcast.wordpress.com, or you can follow the links in the show notes. I would also like to thank Janie and Evan once again for taking the time to sit down with us for that interview.
Thank you so much, Janie and Evan.
But now, we're just about at the end of another Technology and the Arts podcast. John, anything you would like to share with the audience?
Well, as always, I'd like to say to our listeners that if you have an idea for a story or know about a show or event related to technology or art, to let us know about it by emailing us at technology.arts@gmail.com. Also, feel free to send an email just to say hi. And you are always welcome to leave a comment on the Technology and the Arts blog.
Well, that closes the curtain on another Technology and the Arts podcast. Stay tuned for more news and resources related to technology and the arts when we come back with our next show on Wednesday, June 20th, 2007. Our guest for that podcast will be Marcia Loftus, host of the Maddie Life and Bear Country podcast. So until then, for Technology and the Arts, this is Brian Kelly.
And this is John Lemazny. Take care.
The views expressed by the hosts of Technology and the Arts are not necessarily those of guests of the program. Conversely, thoughts and opinions expressed by guests of Technology and the Arts are not necessarily shared by the hosts. For more information about the podcast you have just heard, please visit Technology and the Arts on the web at techarts.wordpress.com.